For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the easy bake oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show. 92.9 FM. ESPN.
Off and rolling on a Tuesday, September 10th, 2024 is the date. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman, Gabe Kuhn. On X at @Kuhn71. I'm alongside, as always, executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at @CDunning929. Connor, what James Earl Jones movie did you hop into last night?
I watched a little bit of The Sandlot.
Okay.
I didn't finish it. No, okay. Because by the time Monday Night Football was over, we watched a little bit of The Sandlot, but then we've become obsessed with this Mormon show.
What are you were telling me about that? It's about Mormon moms?
Absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. There are like 10 life-wrecking things that could happen to these women, or that they
do. Is it a reality show or documentary? Like, what's the...
Yes.
Yes?
Yes. It is absolutely insane.
What's it called?
The Secret Life of Mormon Wives.
Mormon Wives.
Or Moms, maybe. It was 8 episodes. It came out 2 days ago, and we're done.
I see. You told me about it. I'm gonna have to rock through that.
So the first episode.
Sit down with a wife and enjoy it.
The first episode is so nuts that something happens in it to where they had to stop filming for like 11 months. And then they picked up filming 11 months later. Once the show got picked up because nobody wanted it because of what happened in episode one. It was crazy. It's about to take over the country.
Like,
it's going to take over.
Secret Life of Mormon Wives. I thought like the Mormon like religion. I thought people are like clean cut, relaxed, family people.
Uh-huh.
This is not that?
Some are.
Okay, some are. Some are.
Ben Affleck's cousins in it somehow.
Okay. Yeah,
she's rolling around. It's nuts, dude.
Okay, I'm gonna have to hop into that. Now we have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We have some guests today. Bottom half of this hour will be the first installment of our weekly guest, and I'm very excited to bring him on every single week, Tuesday 4:30. Mike Keith, the radio voice of the Tennessee Titans, will be joining at 4:30. That was a rough week for the Titans, though, in week one. We're going to talk about Will Levis. Can he rebound? Where are we at with this Titans team? There was a lot of things to like defensively, a lot of things not to like at all, even remotely, offensively. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins will join the show from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show. 6 o'clock, Christian Fowler, per normal, on a Tuesday from the On the Bluff podcast. We're co-hosts on there, but he is the senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. Now, last night, what'd you think about Monday Night Football? We had 32-19, 49ers got over top. A lot of people were trying to ride the Jets, saying Aaron Rodgers going to be hungry, back at home, he's from the Bay Area, he's going to ride in front of the old home crowd. And that's not quite what happened, although we'll talk about it in a second. I think there's a big takeaway for the Jets, and it's more on the positive side than the negative side. But Christian McCaffrey was out, and Jordan Mason was in. And Jordan Mason was basically in the entire training camp, and I thought he looked unbelievably good. If you picked him up late because Christian McCaffrey was out in fantasy, you did pretty well. 28 carries, 147 yards, and a touchdown. What was weird about it, though, did you see all of the antics?
I did.
Around when he was going to play. Christian McCaffrey's been questionable for a while. He gets ruled out the day of the game. Jordan Mason said after the game, in his post-game sort of, remarks, he said that he was told that he was going to start Friday. But then after the fact, when Kyle Shanahan was asked about it, Kyle Shanahan said, no, that's not how it happened. I didn't tell him that he was going to start on Friday because then it would be a problem with the league office because injury reports have to be published. If you knew he was Christian McCaffrey was going to be out Friday, you should have told everybody that then. But after that, they talked to Jordan Mason yet again at the post-game presser at the podium, and this is what he had to say.
When did you find out that you'd be in the starting lineup?
That question right there is why I'm at. That's why I don't like really talking to media, because you say one thing wrong, and then, you know, I don't know.
Now, can I say this off top? I feel bad for Jordan Mason.
I feel really bad
feel
for Jordan Mason.
Like, seriously,
he didn't do anything wrong.
He has a career game. They actually put it on the broadcast. That was the highest rushing total he has had since high school.
Wow.
This guy was unbelievable in Monday Night Football, put his name on the map, and he has to answer questions about injury reports and nonsense.
I feel miserable for the guy. I feel bad for him. He didn't do anything wrong. It sounds like he just misspoke.
No, and also
was telling the truth.
He's probably telling the truth. But, you know, Kyle Shanahan, the 49ers, didn't want to let people know that Christian McCaffrey wasn't going to be out there. Didn't want to let the Jets get a beat on what they were doing. We know how NFL coaches are. It's like they're hiding the codes for the launching the bombs. You know what I mean? They try to hide everything, keep everything close to the vest until the last second, although per the league office, the NFL Players Association, you're supposed to be a lot more upfront. But for Jordan Mason to have to deal with that, that's ridiculous. And I will say this. If they told him on Friday, they need to also tell him, don't say that you heard it on Friday. You know what I mean? That needs to be the next sentence out of their mouth. They put him in a terrible position. And now it's going to be scrutinized. They may get a fine because, let's be honest, buddy, that affected betting lines.
That affected fantasy football. That affected a lot. I do not think that matters.
But that's, well, injury reports, there's a reason they publish them so early. It is what it is. I'm just saying that affects a lot in this day and age, and it rubs a lot of people the wrong way. And the NFL has to be careful of that, and they've been trying to get ahead of that the past couple of years, but they weren't able to get ahead of it in this situation. But either way, if they told him on Friday Christian McCaffrey was not going to play, they need to also then tell him right after that, okay, you didn't hear this on Friday.
I wonder what was actually said, because Christian McCaffrey's had a questionable designation for a while now.
Yep.
Like, it was,
he didn't play through the entirety of
camp. Like, there was a possibility he wasn't going to play in this game. We all knew about that. So, I mean, it's very possible they told Jordan Mason, hey, man, there's a chance that you're going to start. And so when he got asked the question, he may have just said, yeah, they told me Friday. But it still may have been possible that Christian McCaffrey's. But that's why, I'm going to be honest, this whole situation feels way overblown to me.
It is.
It's not that big of a deal. And I'm going to be completely honest with you, if your leading sentence is, well, betting and fantasy football, I do not care.
Yeah,
I do
well,
not
and
care.
And also, when it comes to betting, if you had like an over rushing yards for Christian McCaffrey, it gets voided.
The NFL does not need to, you know, cater to betting and fantasy football.
Well, but that's, they're in bed with how many different companies at this point?
That's why I have said their eggs are in that basket. I have said
their eggs are in that basket.
It is getting messy.
Their fans' eggs are in that basket. It is messy. I will agree with you. But this is why the injury designations are the injury designations. This is why they're trying to get ahead of these things, because of what has happened the past few years with all of everybody in every state betting via their phone. And fantasy football taking off. You just have to be more careful about these things. But again, Jordan Mason shouldn't have to deal with that. He shouldn't have to bear the brunt for the nonsense of the 49ers messing with their injury report and people out there in the betting markets of fantasy football.
This happens like every week, too.
Right.
It happens every week. If Christian McCaffrey was, if we were told that he was healthy and was expected to play this game, I think it would be different. But he had a questionable designation the entire week and leading up to the game. So that's why I'm just kind of like, yeah, there may have been some nefariousness going on, but at the end of the day, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
All right, now the 49ers were dominant. I don't think there's any way around that.
They were awesome.
The Jets got absolutely run over. And it's kind of funny, too. Everybody was like talking about Hassan Reddick. Edge, who's been out, they traded for him and all the nonsense. They traded for a guy who was unhappy with his contract, and now he's unhappy with not having a contract extension with the Jets, so he's been holding out. I think eventually he'll play, but we'll see. But everybody's talking about him being out. What I saw for the most part in that game, two interior guys, Solomon Thomas, one of the starting D tackles for the New York Jets, and their star D tackle, Quinnen Williams. I saw them getting bowled over by double teams the entirety of the game. And a second string running back running wild because of that. The 49ers did nothing crazy last night. They didn't unleash Brock Purdy. Their leading receiver, for God's sakes, was Juwan Jennings, 64 yards. And I like Juwan Jennings, more of a blocking receiver to me.
Watch it.
But hey, it is what it is. That's a leading receiver. I know he's a Vol. I get it. But
he's a legend.
All they did was line it up and knock the hell out of the Jets the entire game. Hassan Reddick, he could help that. Maybe a couple havoc plays, but he's not the answer to their questions that they had last night against the San Francisco 49ers. The San Francisco 49ers O-line looks better. They look a lot more together. And once Christian McCaffrey comes back, I think they're going to be absolutely nasty. What they're going to be able to do with Christian McCaffrey behind that O-line, if Jordan Mason behind that O-line is any indication, it's going to be really, really tough for the rest of the NFC to sit in there and handle that.
It may be a week one overreaction, but when I was sitting there watching the game and knowing how good the Jets defense can be, I was just like, oh, did we just get bored with the 49ers in the NFC? Are they actually the best team? Because they walked up and punched the Jets in the mouth.
They did.
And they ran over them with their backup running back.
Yep.
And they looked, it was one of the most complete performances I think we saw in week one from any NFL team. They looked very, very good.
And think about
Trent Williams. And Purdy was steady.
Trent Williams was out. Brandon Ayuk was out. They didn't have their full team for the entirety of training camp. Still looked like they didn't miss a beat. It's the same. It looked sort of exactly what we've come to expect.
Did you watch the Manning cast at all?
I did. I saw the Brandon Ayuk stuff.
Oh, it was my favorite moment of the night.
So
it was a bit unfair. It was
Brandon
a diving
Ayuk,
catch that he dropped.
He dropped two corner.
Peyton went nuts.
But he did drop two corner touchdowns. And
true.
I do agree with Peyton's sentiment there. Those are reps where you go and dive for a touchdown pass that you can afford to drop that during training camp or in crossover practice or in the preseason. But when you get into the NFL season, when you get into the regular season, you have to, you know, haul that one in. If he would have had a little bit more practice, a little bit more full speed, if the timing was a little bit better, I bet one of those, at the very least, put 6 points on the board. I agree with what Peyton had to say. He was very aggressive.
He was
with it,
so upset.
He was talking about contract. Get the contract talks out of the way early so you can get into camp, so you're not, you know, catching the ball from a 45-year-old quarterback at a high school. It did kind of make me laugh. But there's a absolute hint of truth to that. Now, I think that the 49ers will be fine. We're going to get, you know, he's going to have to get used to it during practice during the week and during the games on Sunday, but I think he'll get there. I think he'll get there. He was getting open. He was running good routes, and that's what you want to see. And also, he stayed healthy. He didn't have any soft tissue things arise, so that was good. Now, the losing side of this game, some people will say, well, yeah, they got bowled over. We don't know if the Jets are ready. Is Robert Saleh really the guy? He's 18-33 as a head coach. Aaron Rodgers, he only threw for 167. Do you really buy into him at 40 years old? I'll tell you my overwhelming truth. I know they got beat easily, the Jets did. But my biggest takeaway is right there with Robert Saleh. Robert Saleh says it feels better to be 0-1 with Aaron Rodgers than 1-0 last year without Aaron Rodgers. The Jets are going to be all right, man. I truly believe that. As long as Aaron Rodgers can stay on the field consistently, I think they'll be all right. Now, I think he was a little bit belabored with that Achilles, sort of lifted it up at times, his mobility. Went to, you know, on some of his rollouts and getting out of the pocket, he was lifting it up a little bit too much. He's still a little uncomfortable on it. But they lost that game because they got out physical. But I think what is overwhelmingly true, the big question about Aaron Rodgers was, does he have anything left in the tank? And I think he still has some left in the tank. You're not going to be dealing with a 49ers team every week, so you're not going to be getting bowled over on the defensive side of the ball all the time. I thought the throw on the, you know, free shot play to Alan Lazard showed me he still has some zip on the ball. He can fit it into some windows. I think Aaron Rodgers, as the leader of this Jets team, they can absolutely be a playoff team, and I think they can push for the AFC East. You just have to get out of a tough part of your schedule where you're playing the 49ers. That's just a tough opening game, and you saw the result that followed.
Yeah, they had a couple of mistakes, too, like the Breece Hall fumble. I don't expect that to happen every single week. So I thought it was a pretty good showing from the Jets despite the loss. I don't think that they went out there and got their asses kicked by any means. Aaron Rodgers looked better than I was expecting him to, but I also still think he looked like a 40-year-old coming off of an Achilles injury. Like, he definitely wasn't moving around as much. And it just, to me, it felt like the ball didn't have as much zip on it, but he's 40 years old.
Still got some.
Yeah, but he's absolutely still got the placement. The placement there was there. The accuracy was there. So hopefully, moving forward, they can put it together a little bit. But I am interested to see if they decide we need to be a running football team, like if that needs to be the leading offense.
And then here comes the other part of it that I think a lot of people have forgot about. Mike Williams, who's been a really good run, or a really good wide receiver for the Chargers for some years, 1,000-yard receiving seasons. He's had a couple of them. Really tall, 6'5", you know, rangy wide receiver. They signed him this offseason, the Jets did. And they had to limit his snaps. Mm-hmm. He didn't have any targets last night. When he comes back, that's going to be a hell of a target for Aaron Rodgers to exploit, and they can start spreading it out a little bit more. But it was also good to see Alan Lazard back involved in the offense. 6 catches, 89 yards, 2 TDs. I know one was super late in the game, and it was the Tyrod Taylor touchdown. But still, he was very involved in that game when Aaron Rodgers was in. Garrett Wilson still had his 11 targets, 6 catches, 60 yards. Breece Hall's involved in the pass game. They need to get it a little bit more spread out, but I think getting a guy like Mike Williams, who had the ACL injury last year, back on the field will definitely help with that. And I think it's going to make this offense pretty damn good by the time we get to the middle of the season.
Yeah, I do. I think that we're going to see more of what we think the Jets are going to be for the season against the Titans. They'll because it's a team that isn't the 49ers. I just think that they were matched up very well against the Jets, and they just punched them in the mouth. It was over pretty fast. Like, even in the first quarter, you knew which way the game was going to go. That being said, I thought it was a pretty good football game for the entire time. I know it was 32-19, and at a certain moment, it did feel like a bit of a blowout. But overall, I thought it was a really good Monday Night Football game.
Yep, I thought it was fine. I mean, you knew after about 2.5 quarters, you knew which way it was going, though, 100%.
I honestly knew it after the first quarter.
I was going to say, I knew it before that, but then the long touchdown to Alan Lazard had you leaning back in to see how it went, but I thought it was fun.
It was the 49ers, their ability to move the football every single time was impressive.
I think what it was for both sides, more than like a good game, it was telling for both sides. I got a good read for each team. 49ers still very dominant. Jets, as long as Aaron Rodgers stays healthy and is the quarterback for that team, they have a chance. We've always known that, but there was questions. 40-year-old coming off an Achilles, how's that going to look? I still think he has some good games left in him. Now, we have the Florida State-Memphis game coming up this weekend, and I don't know if you've been sort of following the back and forth and how sort of hyped up this game is getting, Connor, but it's getting there, man. It is absolutely getting there. I saw today for a Tuesday show for Jim Rome. Guess who was on there? Ryan Silverfield ended up with Jim Rome today talking before Jackson Dart. For you Ole Miss fans, Jackson Dart was right after Ryan Silverfield. But the hype's getting there. And I think what we're starting to see is the familiarity is going to be a big, big story by the time we get to 11 a.m. on Saturday. Not just the Ryan Silverfield Norvell thing, but Adam Fuller, the defensive coordinator for Florida State, and Tim Kramsey, the offensive coordinator for Memphis, were on the same staff in those same positions at Marshall in 2018. So there's just way too much familiarity here, and I wonder how much that plays into the game. I know that Ryan has the book on everything that Mike wants to do for the most part offensively. I'm not sure I can say the exact same thing about that staff. The Adam Fuller connection with Tim Kramsey, maybe. But I can't say the same about Mike Norvell and Adam Fuller knowing exactly what Tim Kramsey's going to dial up with his offensive game plan. I think familiarity will be a bigger story on the field, not just off the field, as we get into Saturday.
So in that aspect, it sounds like you think Memphis might actually have a slight edge there. A slight one, barely.
Mm-hmm. Barely, because Ryan's not a play caller. Ryan has sat in numerous game planning meetings with Mike over the years. Like, he knows exactly what he wants to dial up, when he wants to dial it up. And I don't know if you heard his presser yesterday. He said that he expects him to do a trick play on the second series of the game. You know, they're playing mind games with each other. They're going back and forth. Ryan said he's not going to text him this week, but they may shoot a couple of jabs via text to each other. Just one little text, one little message at a time. This is It's going to be a fun game. It's going to be a really fun game. I am still sort of confused about the way the line has moved. I wonder if Vegas knows something we don't, maybe at the quarterback position. Or maybe they have, I don't know if there's someone from Vegas that's been at practice and sees DJU playing better. I seriously doubt that. But I see that line move from 1.5 to about 7 at this point, and I just don't really know the full reasoning behind it. Because if it's what I think it is, which is extra week of practice with a bye week and a team that's angry, you knew that going into last week when you opened that line at 1.5. There's something going on, and I can't quite put my finger on it.
To your point about this game being such a big deal, it's the front page story right now on ESPN. Like, right. When you open up ESPN, the first thing that you see is Mike Norvell's face. And it says, what has gone wrong for Florida State? And then it's a story about them having to play Memphis this week. It's a really big deal. Can I put you on the spot for a split second?
Of course. Yeah, why not?
So, Mike versus Ryan, how do you think they're going to try to attack each other? Like, how do you think Mike's going to try to attack the Memphis defense? And what do you think Ryan's game plan is for Florida State?
That's going to be very interesting. I can't really speak to exactly what they're talking about behind the scenes. I would imagine Ryan looks at the first two games of the season as an offensive line coach.
Run.
Saw Georgia Tech and what Boston College was able to do, and he's saying, we're going to at least have to establish a run. We're going to have to get to about 5 yards per carry because everyone's able to do that on them. So let's try to do that first, then we could potentially air it out. But I know as an O-line coach, he's definitely going to want to run the hell out of the ball. And I think the Troy game was a precursor to trying to open up the playbook with your run schemes to get your O-line and your running backs familiar with what you want to do going into Florida State in that tough environment. Now, Mike, what he's going to have to do offensively, you know, the problem with that question, Connor, there's a big problem with that question.
DJ.
You have a quarterback.
It's DJ, yeah.
Who is unable, seemingly, to make the plays with his arm that need to be made.
Mm-hmm.
He's never had a quarterback that has been this bad in those situations. You get into second and third and long, obvious passing situations where the defensive line is pinning their ears back. They may bring a five-man pressure. He is out of sorts. When he has someone in his face, you saw the pick he threw against Boston College when he had the defensive end directly in his face. Just sort of threw it up for grabs, goes the other way. Gives Boston College, spots them seven. So the problem with trying to discuss what Mike wants to do offensively is he needs some semblance of a passing game, and I don't think he has that this year. His idea is going to be, let's run the ball and try to help out DJ. But
it's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We see that this Memphis run defense has the ability to be pretty stout because their linebackers are very, very good. Well, they're good sideline to sideline. They're good downhill. They're great at filling.
Right. And that's what I was going to say is that the obvious answer for Norvell is I'm saying what he would want to do is exploit Memphis's defensive backs.
Sure.
Throw the football. But I don't know if he can. DJ,
no.
We know that Mike's offenses, if you can throw the ball 10-plus yards, 15-plus yards, you can make some stuff happen. I just don't know if DJ can do that.
No. If I'm Memphis.
I hope he can. I hope he doesn't find it this week. That would suck.
If I'm Jordan Hankins, and I'm sure these are conversations that are being had behind the scenes. If I'm Jordan Hankins, I am actually getting to a higher blitz percentage this week than I've been in the first 2 weeks against inferior opponents. Usually against inferior opponents, you blitz them because you don't trust their talent. You're like, okay, beat me. I'm bringing an extra guy. Go ahead and beat me. I would blitz the hell out of DJU. This O-line has not been good at passing off and figuring out where the blitz is coming from. DJU is terrible with a guy in his face. I would dial up more 5- and 6-man pressures to get after DJU, especially as you get into those obvious passing downs on second and third and long. But I think first and foremost for this Memphis defense, obviously, is stop the run and make DJ beat you. It's that simple.
It's make DJ beat you.
And I think any team that plays Florida State this year, that's the game plan you run out. Until they make a quarterback switch, that's exactly what other teams are going to do to them. I don't know if they'll ever make a quarterback switch, but I don't know. I mean, there does come a point where you have to start thinking about a four-star in Brock Glenn, who you brought in to be a potential next guy up. A guy who played last year in the ACC championship, didn't play overly well, but he was a true freshman. But he played in the ACC championship and led Florida State to a win. At some point, you sort of do have to decide, what do I want to do with this thing going forward? DJU is not going to be my quarterback of the future. If you lose this season, if you lose another game and you're going to just go, try to scrape out six wins and be a bowl team, why not move on to the future and see if you have a guy in that quarterback room who can take you into the future? And I think Brock Glenn would probably be the next guy up. This has just been a strange year for him. He tried to fill in the holes that were voided by all the players heading into the NFL. And he just didn't upgrade at any particular position group or position. It's just a tough year for him.
I wonder if he's looking at Alabama right now and being like, man.
I don't think for Mike it was a lack of effort or a lack of NIL resources or any of that. I just think he truly just grabbed the wrong guys this year. And that's the risk you run with the portal, isn't it? That's what it is.
At the end of you cannot win if you have a bad quarterback.
Right.
Period.
Right.
Can't do it.
But let me ask you this about that team. Is their O-line very good? Not really. Is their D-line very good? Sure, they got NFL bodies, but no.
How many players did they lose?
Linebackers, not very good. I mean, they lost all of their skill positions on the offensive side of the ball. Jordan Travis, Jaheim Bell, their tight end. Keon Coleman, Johnny Wilson at wide receiver. Trey Benson at running back. They lost all their skill positions. They kept most of their offensive line, but that's not what they hung their hat on last year.
10 players from Florida State were selected in the NFL draft.
And all of their best.
Is a lot of players.
Yeah.
That is a lot. And a lot of them came on the defensive side of the football.
He didn't have the high school recruiting class ready to go, so he had to hit the portal. And sometimes you just strike out. Sometimes you don't recruit the right guys. And that's what I think happened to the guy. It's that simple. But we'll continue to talk about this game as the week goes along. But we need to go ahead and get to our first installment of the NFL season with Mike Keith, the radio voice of the Tennessee Titans. Make sure you stick around. He's next. Week one of the NFL season is in the rear view, so it's time for our first of many installments throughout the NFL season with Mike Keith, the radio voice of the Tennessee Titans. He is on X at 10 Voice. Mike, how's it going?
Dave, it's good to be with you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Kind of a rough start to the season, I would say. And I think really the conversation for the Titans is revolving around Will Levis at this moment. What do you make of the conversation and that first game he had? Definitely a rough pick six, but it's a long season, 16 more games.
That's right. And I mean, I think that's the part of it that is hard to keep in mind when you have a mistake at the end of the game. That so glaringly cost you the points that cost you the game. You just have that sort of burned into your mind to the point you say, oh boy, where are we and everything. But the reality is, this is a guy who started 10 games. Mm-hmm. He started 9 last year in a completely different system. His offensive line is almost totally new. It's 80% new. I mean, we knew this was going to take a minute, and it's hard to take the deep breath at this moment in time and realize that this guy's going to have a chance to get there, but this whole thing is going to take time. And, Gabe, when we got out to the 17-0 lead, you said, okay, these things that we had worried about, new offense, new defense, new special team, new head coach, new coordinators, all these different players. We only had 25 players on the roster on Sunday that were on the opening day roster in 2023. Wow. So you're saying, okay, all that stuff we've been worried about, forget it. That was me being worried about nothing. And then the second half comes, and particularly for the offense, all the new shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of where we were, is you're saying, okay, all the stuff I worried about really did come true. Is it my fault that I worried about it?
Right.
So I think that's where Will is. That's kind of where we are as a team. And it may be bumpy for a minute. We're going to get there. I think we've got the people in place. I think Will's going to be a really, really good pro quarterback. But he can't make that mistake in a 17-16 game. I know what he was trying to do. I understand it. I don't think he was being stupid. You know, it's not like getting a personal foul penalty when one of your players scores a touchdown because you take a swing at somebody. He's trying to avoid losing the yardage. I get it. But guess what? In that situation, it's going to be fourth down anyway. Take the sack.
Yeah, and their offense hadn't done a thing all day.
No, and the other part of it, too, is, I mean, let's say you punt it back to them and they go down the field and kick a field goal. Well, mm-hmm. Gabe, then all you need is a field goal.
You're right.
You know, what changed it for us is suddenly we get the ball back with six whatever remaining, and we need a touchdown. And mm-hmm. that's a completely different scenario. So he's got to think scenario, how do I manage this? What do I do next? All of these sorts of things have to come into focus, and he's not there yet.
Yep.
And that was, you know, that was a mistake that bit us in the butt, and he can't make that mistake again.
Yeah, and I think there is a positive to take from this whole thing. You can't make that mistake again, so don't repeat it. But also, Brian Callahan, I mean, he's used to, you know, giving lessons to young quarterbacks, and that was a unbelievably teachable game and moment in general.
Yeah. I mean, and he talked about it some yesterday. We did his radio and his TV show yesterday. And, yeah, I mean, he's hurting, you know, because this is one you let get away that you – I mean, when you're ahead 17-0 in college football, it's one thing.
Yeah.
When you're ahead 17-0 in the pros, that's a massive lead. And to let it get away hurts. But at the same time, you're saying, okay, we had a 67-yard kickoff return allowed – punt block for a touchdown allowed, interception when the quarterback's trying to just throw the ball away, return for a touchdown. Those three things aren't going to happen again on Sunday against the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
One of them might, but all three of them aren't going to happen again. And so you're going back in and you're talking to your team this week about, look, let's take care of us. The Jets are a better team overall than the Bears. We've got a real challenge in front of us, but let's just take care of us. Because when we did that during the course of the ball game, we did some things well. And mm-hmm. that's going to be the message.
Yep. Now, you got to see the first regular season game from Caleb Williams. I will say, I think he's only going to go up from here. I think there will be more impressive games ahead of him. But what did you make of his sort of command and how he looked in game one? I think most of the rookies seem to struggle, the three starting quarterback rookies.
Yeah, and most of them do. Very rarely does a rookie not struggle. And what's funny about it, Gabe, it's kind of like when you tell your child what it's going to be like to take the ACT. You're like, listen, you got to go in there, and you're going to get a little panicky. And you know what they say to you is, Dad, I got this.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guidance counselor tells them, and the teachers tell them, and friends who have taken it tell them, and they're like, oh, I got this. And then they walk in there and they flip out.
Yep.
Right? Caleb Williams was saying, oh, I'm not nervous. You know, I've done this. I played at a big school in the D.C. area. I played at Oklahoma. I played at SC. I got this. And then he gets real game speed in the NFL, a real defense, and he says, oh, my goodness. I mean, I bet he had not ever looked like that at any point in his entire life back to grass cutters. But you know what? That's the NFL.
Yep.
And I think he's going to be fine. I think he'll be a star. Credit him for not making a big mistake, because he didn't. If he had, the Bears lose the game. And he didn't. But I think he'll learn a lot. I mean, as young quarterbacks, and even for Will with 10 starts, It's hard. Yep. I mean, it's when you're playing against a good defense, especially, it is hard. And these guys both experienced it. You know, we saw it a lot around the NFL totally.
Yeah.
We had half of the NFL teams in the league, 16, gained less than 300 yards in total offense. Uh-huh. There were only two 300-yard passers yep. in week one. There were seven 100-yard rushers,
mm-hmm.
which is rare. Normally, you have about the same number of 300-yard passers as 100-yard rushers, in some cases more 300-yard passers on a weekly basis. But this was a strange week one.
Well, but here's the thing. I think there's a couple of things you can attribute it to, right? I think the lessening of preseason, the games in general, a lot of these starters not getting a lot of time in the preseason to get that game speed. And then let's be honest about this, Mike. Football is cyclical. The Tampa 2, more high safeties, limiting big plays, keeping everything in front of you, that's part of the game. And we have a lot of quarterbacks that have been trained previously to try to take the deep shots downfield, to try to, not necessarily live to fight another down. Only the best of the best, really, at this moment are doing that. I think Patrick Mahomes has learned that over the years. Baker Mayfield did a great job of it this week. But I think also those two high safety looks, they have definitely limited what the quarterback can do down to down. And we have a lot of younger quarterbacks that need to learn to live and fight another down.
That, and, that was something for Will Levis, because he knew against Matt Eberflus' defense that's what he was going to have to do. He was going to have to make the smart choices. So it's hard because, that's not what you want to do. The other part of it, too, is defensive players have had a scheme in place all off season for game one.
Mm-hmm.
They've known exactly what they wanted to do. And, Gabe, they're 100% healthy.
Yep.
So they want to go with their best nickel package. They want to go with a nickel linebacker. They want to rotate in these particular players for this situation. They've got everybody. By week seven, they'll be lucky if they have 70% of that, and they only have 6 days to get ready for the next game.
Mm-hmm. It's a wild reality. It's a wild reality. I did see also there was a stat about passing touchdowns in the first week of the NFL season. This is a five-year low from what we've seen. So, as much as we want to sort of corner Will Levis and Caleb Williams and some of the rookies, it was just a league-wide problem for the most part. Now, I do want to go to another team in the AFC where Brian Callahan's coming from. What'd you think of that performance from the Bengals losing to the Patriots week one? It felt like it was unfathomable.
Well, and so the Bengals have had this problem in week one and week two, for that matter, under Zach Taylor, who I think is a really good coach. And everyone said, well, it's been because Joe Burrow wasn't healthy. He was coming off of surgery or he couldn't. And guess what? Joe Burrow was able to practice through training camp, and the feeling was they'll come out and they'll be smoking. And, boy, they were smoking in a bad way. They were leaking oil.
Right.
I mean, it was not what you want. And I think overall, you kind of wonder about them. I mean, that's a bad loss. It's a home loss. No juice against a team on paper you appear a lot better than. It's an AFC loss, which makes it a bad thing. Just not good. I mean, just
right.
No other way to put it other than not good for the Cincinnati Bengals. And we'll see if they can get it back on track this week.
And listen, they're notorious slow starters, Joe Burrow the same way, but I think we still have concerns about his wrist injury. We have concerns about him and Ja'Marr Chase not linking up in training camp because he held out the entire time. But we'll see how that ages. Now, when it comes to the AFC, that was one of the teams I sort of put in the conversation because we've seen it in the past. Hey, maybe by the time we get to the playoffs, that's a team that can compete and maybe knock off the Chiefs, even though I still think it's relatively unlikely. In the AFC, what's your sort of short list of teams that you think can really go press the Chiefs right now? How many teams? What are those teams?
I think the team we're going to see this week can be one of them.
Okay.
I think the Jets can be one of them because if Aaron Rodgers can get going, then Aaron Rodgers can make this team a Super Bowl contender based on what the defense looks like for Robert Saleh's team. They're nasty. Now, in the game last night, harder to read because they fall behind and then San Francisco runs the ball. And so it doesn't look like they're a nasty defense because they gave up 400 yards. But we all know when you're playing from behind, you're in a completely different situation against anybody in the league who can load it up and run it. Oh, by the way, San Francisco's the NFC champ.
Right.
Just to throw that in. So I think they are part of the conversation to me. I think Baltimore is very much part of the conversation. I think they are a very dangerous team. I'm interested in Miami.
Okay.
Because Miami is, you know, they got weapons on defense, and we know what they are on offense. Pretty nice win over Jacksonville in week one coming from behind. That's certainly a team that intrigues me in terms of what they could do and what they could be. So far, they haven't gotten it done in the playoffs, so it's got to happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about that in-division team, the Texans?
You know, the Texans have a tremendous amount of talent, and they got a good win in week one at Indy. On paper, I still like Jacksonville 1-53 better.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, you know, Jacksonville has a really, really solid team that went in the tank down the stretch last year almost inexplicably.
Mm-hmm.
We beat them in week 18 in a game they needed to win, and we're playing out the string on a 5-11 season that, you know, we got all kinds of issues with injury, and it just didn't make any sense. Not a good sign for them to start with the kind of loss they had, but I think to go into Miami and to have control of that game, which they did, tells you a lot about who they can be. So I like Houston. I think there's a very real chance that Houston and Jacksonville are both playoff teams. Jacksonville has a little bit more. And remember this, too, about Houston. They're playing a first-place schedule this year.
They are. Yep, correct.
So three of their games, which were against last-place teams a year ago, are against first-place teams this mm-hmm. year. And Indianapolis, who they beat in week one, wasn't one of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. Now, last thing for you, Mike. They're talking with Mike Keith, the radio voice of the Tennessee Titans on X at 10 Voice. I do have to bring up my favorite player on the field, though, for the Tennessee Titans this week. What'd you think of Tavondre Sweat in his first game in a Titans uniform in the regular season? He has no business being as athletic as he is for that size.
Scary.
It's ridiculous.
We've never had since we've been in this state. So what now, 27 years, something like that? We've never had a player like him. Albert Haynesworth was big, not that big, but he was a defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some guys who weighed more than 350, but they were pluggers, you know?
Yep.
They were first.
Two-gappers, that
players.
Type of thing.
Yeah, this guy is a three-down player at 370 pounds. I mean, he can rush the passer. He's got moves.
Right.
He could be lighter.
Sure.
You know, I mean, he certainly could be lighter, and I think probably at some point he'd like to be. But he would be a whoppingly big man even if he were not an athlete. And I think when you talk about people with that natural size, they're used to being able to do things like smaller people because this is who they are, Gabe. I mean, you played with them.
Yeah.
There's some guys who are just freaky because that's who they are. I mean, Tavondre can play basketball.
Right.
Tavondre has a lot of skills, and he and Jeffrey Simmons together are going to make things scary. Both of them played well in Chicago. Neither one of them had massive stats,
mm-hmm.
but the difference for both players is because they played well, they opened things up for the linebackers. They opened things up for the edge rushers. They opened things up for other defensive linemen who were in the game. And, you know, they will eat. Mm-hmm. Their moments will come, but their opportunities to I think you got to, if you don't figure out how to block Jeff Simmons, he'll make a sack every single play.
Yep.
Or he'll make a tackle in the backfield every single play. So the Bears double teamed him. And then Tavondre the poor center for Chicago.
It's brutal. I was trying to go back to my playing days thinking about a 6'4", 370-pound man doing an arm over on me after, swiveling his hips. That's impossible to block. That's so hard. With that type of mass coming at you in strength, it's just so impossible.
And the center for them was listed at 295. So he, on paper, outweighs the guy by 75 pounds.
Yes.
I mean, that's like something in Little League where the kid had the spray paint on his helmet signifying he's too big to touch the ball.
Correct. Yep.
You know, I mean, it's just and this is why, I mean, what you're raising is why we're still very optimistic.
Right.
And why, no matter what happens in September, we're going to continue to be optimistic. We need to win one of these games. You know, we do not need to start over, but this ball club, I think, is going to be really dangerous as the season goes on, because all of this new will wear off, and we'll start playing together in a way that will give us a chance to be really unsettling to a lot of people.
Yep, I fully agree with that. And I think that defense could be a nice little calling card. We'll see how Will Levis comes along. But we will talk again next week about that. I'm sure we'll catch up on it. But, Mike, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Gabe. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir. That's Mike Keith, the radio voice of the Tennessee Titans. He's on X at 10 Voice. Now, we need to go ahead and transition. We're going to get to hour number two coming up next. And we'll go ahead and start that up with Jeff Calkins. One guest to the next. Jeff Calkins, right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Northsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly!